Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.
We went from normal life, healthy child, to acute lymphoblastic leukemia, or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy, and we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind. My name is Robert Lamb.
And my name is Christian Sager. We have kind of like a unofficial series of episodes that we've been doing over the course of the last 2 years that are related to various Asian cultures and death.
Mm-hmm.
And this is another one of those. So we've talked about ghost burial before. We've talked about Chinese immortality. And then this is also slightly connected to the episode that we did on, or maybe it was two episodes, on mummification.
Yeah, I feel like we've done two, maybe more. I know that we've talked about exploring more and more of the mummification cultures throughout the world. Oh, I know what it is. We discussed Japanese custom in an episode.
Yeah. Oh, and then there's also the monks.
Yeah, the self-mummifying monks.
Yes, yeah, those monks. Guys. That's the other one. So this is along those lines. Today we're going to be talking about jade burial suits. And once I got done researching this, my first thought was, this would be a far cooler way to make a new mummy franchise. They've been showing the trailers constantly for that new mummy movie with Tom Cruise that's coming out this summer, and it looks awful. And I think that this would be a cool mummy, like this mummy in this giant suit of jade armor coming at you. That would be so much fun.
Yeah, because you look at images of this, and there should be an image of one of these suits of jade burial armor on the landing page for this episode at stufftoblowyourmind.com. It's it looks kind of like the villain in that first Thor movie, you know?
Oh, yeah.
That big suit of animate armor that he fought.
The Destroyer.
Yeah, it looks kind of like the Destroyer. It's beautiful, and indeed, I could see an Eastern mummy franchise really having some fun with this.
Yeah.
That being said, I did not see the Eastern mummy entry, like the third or fourth mummy film that came out.
Oh, did they do something like that already?
They did.
Oh, I didn't know.
I don't know what, having not seen it, I can't speak for the mummy design.
Yeah.
However, I know there's a scene where Yetis attack. So I kind of want to watch it for that.
Huh. I had no idea that even existed. This is like from the 1990s mummy franchise with the Scorpion King and all that.
Yeah, this one was post Scorpion King.
Okay.
And That's about all I know about
it. Wow. Okay. Well, maybe we'll talk about that one on Trailer Talk when we do a Facebook Live about these episodes this week.
So in this episode, we're going to be exploring a practice that, that is tied directly to the Western Han Dynasty. And we're going to, I know a lot of you out there are not going to have a real firm handle on dynastic Chinese history. Don't worry. We're going to root all that where it needs to be placed in the timeline shortly. But, these suits are, you know, we can call them jade suits. We can call them jade armor. In Mandarin, they're sometimes referred to as yu sha, which are jade caskets, or sometimes yu yi, which are jade garments. And it is essentially a stone garment, if you think mm-hmm. about that, because jade is a stone. And that's probably a great place to start, really. Let's just discuss what jade is before we pile on its supernatural connotations and then get into Chinese history.
Okay.
All right, so jade is essentially an ornamental green rock. Everyone has probably seen something that is either made of jade or is supposed to be made of jade. But then what does that even mean?
Yeah, I'm thinking of like in the local mall that we have here, there's like a couple like places where you can buy sort of like Chinese themed aesthetic decorations for the home. And usually there's like a piece of jade in it somewhere, or it might be made of some kind of fake jade. There's those, I forget what they're called, but they're like red, ribbons or, threads, and they've mm-hmm. got a piece of jade woven into them.
Oh yeah. You often see little rings of jade.
Yeah.
Sometimes worn by children in China still, mm-hmm. Or incorporated into, some sort of direct decoration or personal adornment. And, the interesting thing here, though, is that whatever you're calling jade, jade is the name given to two distinct minerals, nephrite and jadeite. And in their purest form, either of these is white. In Chinese, it's referred to as mutton fat jade.
Huh.
And you'll also have minerals such as iron and chromium that give jade its many hues. So there's not just one color of jade. It's not like a Crayola. This is jade.
Yeah.
Hold it up to your stone and see if it matches.
It's like a
there's
gamut a between white and like very green.
Yeah, very and darker greens, yeah. So let's talk about these two varieties real quick. The nephrite is sometimes referred to as true jade. It's very strong. It has a more vivid green coloration.
And this is the stuff that the Chinese worked with during the Han Dynasty, which is what we're going to be talking about today. Because jadeite wasn't introduced to China until the late 1600s via Burma. So when we're talking about these pieces of jade armor, they're made using nephrite, not jadeite.
Now, jadeite, on the other hand, is more fragile, and it has a brilliant gleaming surface when polished.
Now, jade is usually found inside pebbles or boulders where like the rough stony exterior doesn't really give a clue as to what's in there. Jade itself, it can't be chipped or flaked, so it has to be worn down using a rough paste and a combination of rotary discs, grinders, and tools. And during the Han Dynasty, this paste was made with water, grease, and sand, and then iron tools had been developed specifically for the art and craft of working with jade to develop and work it further into various forms. So I think this is a good point for me to just bring up, like, I think here in the West, jade is sort of this very like stereotypical attached idea to like the Orient.
Yeah,
right?
It's very bound up in Orientalism, right?
Yeah. Like, do you remember that video game came out? Gosh, must have been 10, 15 years ago now. Jade Empire. I played the hell out of that game.
Oh, was this a turn-based RPG?
Yeah, it was made by the same people who made the Knights of the Old Republic games and the Dragon Age games.
Oh,
very
okay.
Similar setup, except for this was in, it had a really cool setting, but it was like a steampunk mythological China.
Yeah.
And, you know, as such, used very like kind of stereotypical pieces from that mythology.
But still, I mean, I have to admit, as much as I love exploring Asian history. I also love fantasy inspired by Asian
motifs.
So I should check it out a little bit. I don't know. Is it one of those where the graphics don't really hold up?
I mean, I haven't played it in so long. I think it was, I played it on the original Xbox, but it was fun. You got like this various group of characters. You would have, I think, like three characters at a time that would go on these like sort of dungeon crawl missions, and like one would be a spell. It was very D&D, but it was like, we've talked about this on the show before, the sort of like racist oriental adventures D&D where they would like, you know, you'd have a spellcaster, you'd have a warrior, and you'd have like a ninja or something like that. And they would like go there. It was really just like a fighter, a rogue, and a magic user.
Gotcha.
And yeah, they'd have these various missions. They'd fight monsters from Chinese mythology. Yeah. It was fun aesthetically.
So there's probably a little jade in there. And
I think the jade was a big theme in it. Yeah.
Well, jade is a big theme in Chinese traditions. So we should probably discuss what its supernatural powers were thought to be.
Yeah.
We've given a brief overview of its physical properties. Certainly you can go in deeper if you want to. We're not really a minerals podcast, but there's a lot of great information out there about jade if that's your thing.
Mm-hmm.
As far as supernatural qualities go, jade was believed to have protective and preservative qualities, warding off both decay and evil spirits. I've also read that some believe jade darkens as the wearer gets richer, as they get poorer. So it's kind of like a mood ring for your financial status.
That's great. Instead of having like an app on your phone that tells you how your bank account's doing, you just have like a little piece of jade, like on one of those red wristbands.
Yeah. You meet somebody, you want to know where they stand, you just take a peek at their jade. Now, it's also worth pointing out that in terms of just how important jade is in Chinese tradition and mythology, you have Yu Di, the Jade Emperor, and he stands as the supreme god in the Chinese mythological pantheon. And if you actually think back to the episode on the Chinese zodiac that Stuff to Blow Your Mind did a while back, there's this whole parable of the swimming zodiac animals in a race, and they're racing for a Yu Di.
Have you seen any of those wuxia movies about Dr. D?
I haven't. I'm familiar with them by name, but I haven't watched
them. They're fun. You should check them out. Yeah.
Now, it's also important to note that Taoist alchemists as well put an emphasis on jade as part of an immortality elixir that also contained gold, silver, arsenic, and other ores. And it was said to provide resistance to aging and decay. In fact, in the 320 CE book, Pao Puzu, which means the master embracing simplicity, author Gi Hong wrote that gold and jade inserted into the nine orifices prevented corpses from decaying.
Okay, so this comes up a lot today when we're talking about this jade burial armor, and I want to establish something here. So I read this and I went, I got to count my orifices. And I was like, I kept coming up short. I only counted seven. And then I realized they were counting the eyes.
Yes. And it might sound kind of grotesque to think of eye plugs, but they're not like corks that go on the eye sockets. They're more like...
They're little shields.
Yeah.
It's kind of like when...
Like cucumbers on the eyes.
Yeah. The one I was going for was how they would put coins on people's eyes so that they could pay the ferryman for the River Charon. But yeah this is obviously different mythology, but it's the same principle. It's like little jade shields that went over your eyes. So... I don't know if I'm wrong or right, but I never thought of my eyes as being orifices.
Well, it's where the light comes in, right?
It's true. Something's going in there.
Yeah. Now, it's interesting. I mentioned children wearing jade bangles earlier, and you still see this used in China. And this, the idea here is that this protects the child from harm, including soul-separating fright by a demon. And I actually ran across a cool source for this. So if we ever want to do an episode on Chinese exorcism, playing off our past episodes on exorcism, this would be a good one to seek out.
I think that's a hard yes from me. But audience, let us know if you're interested in Chinese exorcism.
Now, in terms of other associations, some traditional Chinese medicine approaches call for the use of jade massaging tools to help. I was reading about using it on wrinkles on the face. And there are also ingredients with jade in the name in Chinese traditional medicine that are not actually jade, such as jade windscreen powder. That's just a dried root of a particular plant, but it has nothing to do with the mineral itself.
So even though, like, we're well past this sort of, you know, myth that jade has this ability to stave off decay, it's still used in a lot of those sort of, I guess, homeopathic methodologies. Like, I was reading about one of the ones, the ancient Chinese jade stone being used, like, I think they would, like, wrap it around your neck, and it was supposed to help you with TMJ.
Huh. Yeah. I mean, ultimately, it comes down to the idea that here is this very beautiful, cool-looking stone that came out of the ground. Surely it's worth keeping around for something, right?
Right, yeah. It reminds me of hematite. There's similar stuff surrounding hematite, yeah, but just, I think, in different cultures.
And, you know, a lot of this bleeds into other cultures outside of China. I know if you happen to visit a Korean sauna, we have one of these in the Atlanta area named Jeju, And I love going there. They have these various saunas sauna rooms that have different minerals there. And they have one that has jade in it. And the idea here is that, quote, jade increases metabolism, improves circulation, and relieves arthritis pain.
All right. Now, this is giving me an idea for a business, and I'm not very entrepreneurial, so maybe somebody out there can start this. So you combine the jade sauna idea with the flotation sensory deprivation tank. And build a sensory deprivation tank out of jade, and then you climb inside that and you float in salinated water for an hour.
That would be amazing, because that's something that's kind of lacking with float tank scenarios.
Yeah.
Is they're very secular.
Yeah.
They could use a little mystical
spice
wrapping.
It up. Yeah. Yeah. That would be fun. I'd do it.
Yeah. Plug our orifices with some jade
and let us go. Give me 9 pieces of jade. All right. Well, before we get those 9 pieces of jade, why don't we take a quick break? And when we get back, we're going to give you a little bit of a rundown on the Western Han Dynasty.
Shout out to Astapro for sponsoring this episode and providing us with free samples.
Rob, as the local host with allergies here, they sent you some of their nasal spray to treat your allergies. What was your experience like?
Yeah, that's right. I always wrestle with the pollen a bit when it rolls in during the spring. So they sent me the little nasal spray. I tried out the product and it sure did help me get on top of my symptoms for the day. And it's so fast acting, it was already kicking in before I left the house.
Astapro is a first-of-its-kind nasal allergy spray. It's the fastest 24-hour over-the-counter allergy spray. It starts working in 30 minutes, while other allergy sprays take hours. Astapro is the first and only 24-hour steroid-free allergy spray. Astapro delivers full prescription-strength indoor and outdoor allergy relief from nasal congestion, runny and itchy nose, and sneezing.
Get fast-acting nasal allergy symptom relief with Astapro. Go to astaproallergy.com for a discount so you can get Astapro and go today. Astaproallergy.com. Astapro and go. Use this directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.
We went from normal life, healthy child to acute lymphoblastic leukemia, or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy, and we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.
All right, we're back. So I realize Chinese dynastic succession can be confusing for folks. And certainly, especially if you're just going from zero, trying to go to from zero to 50 on it, it's a lot to take in.
I will admit, I mean, as some listeners know, I spent time in China as a kid. I learned Mandarin growing up, and I lived in Singapore during high school. And Chinese history is completely lost on me. It's really tough for me to keep track of it.
Yeah, I'm constantly referring back to the chart with the dynasties. Now, I know there's a little song. I've heard people sing this.
Okay.
Where it's Frère Jacques, except it's,
really?
It's the different dynasties.
I have not heard this.
Yes.
Okay.
When I say I've heard it, I've seen a video with two old white, Chinese scholars, singing it to each other as an example of something you learn in school when you're learning about Chinese history.
Okay. All right. So it's like a mnemonic device.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we're not going to throw it all at you. Basically, we're going to go from the beginning up until the Han Dynasty, just and throughout the year, so you can place it in the general time frame. And the Han Dynasty is essentially the fourth or fifth dynasty, or the second imperial dynasty. It ultimately depends on what you count as a dynasty. And this has to do with sort of legendary mythic time. So let's start from the beginning. First up, you have the Xia Dynasty. This is 2070 to 1600 BCE, and it's largely mythological with some very early Bronze Age evidence. So, yeah, this is the time of gods and heroes. And this is why some don't actually count this in terms of historical dynasties. But then comes the Shang Dynasty, and this was long considered apocryphal, but historians now correlate it with oracle bone writings. This period takes us up to roughly 1123 BCE and the Zhou Dynasty. Now, this is the first millennium BCE, and this is a time of conflict in China. And there are two periods here that are of particular note, and that's the spring and autumn from 722 to 481 BCE, and the Warring States period, 475 through 221 BCE.
Okay, so what I'm seeing here so far is it seems like these dynasties last, you know, roughly around 500 years.
Yeah, so far. Now, at the end of the Warring States period, the Qin Dynasty begins. And this is when the Qin Kingdom conquered other central Chinese states and became the first truly imperial dynasty under Qin Shi Huang, the first emperor of China.
Okay.
And it was during this rule that the northern border wall was implemented, what we now call the Great Wall. And in the first of many peasant uprisings to echo through Chinese history, Liu Bang rose up and conquered China to found, finally, the Han Dynasty in 206 BCE. And this was only, you know, 15 years later.
Okay, so this is where we're zoning in terms of this jade burial armor being created, right? But
right.
There's obviously many dynasties afterward.
So, yeah, the Han Dynasty is big money early on. Like, this is, again, a time of things coming together, of unity. Certainly, there are still lots of lingering problems, as with any, you know, imperial scenario, but it's a time where there are enough riches out there, there's enough specialization that you can have something like a fancy funeral tradition take place. Now, overall, the Han Dynasty ran from 202 or 206 BCE until 221 CE. So we're talking about a pretty long stretch here. And that at the end of this, in 221 CE, that's when everything splits into the three kingdoms. But we divide the Han Dynasty up into the former or Western Han Dynasty and also the later or Eastern Han Dynasty. And that's because in the midst of this long, you know, four century stretch, you have a rebellion take place. And basically what happens is a Han Dynasty official, Wang Mang, seizes power. And this is referred to as the Xin Dynasty, 9 through 23 AD. He does a pretty poor job. And then the Hans reclaim power in 23 AD after besieging the imperial palace. He dies in the process. So in other words, you have 400 years of Han rule, but there's this one little period where an usurper comes
like
to
a,
power.
Yeah, like a 20-year period, or actually less than 20 years of this one guy ruling and then just getting taken down.
So again, this is an influential 4 centuries in Chinese history, saw the institution of Confucian norms, the roots of the imperial examination system, an age of great economic, technological, cultural, and social progress. Han still refers to the main Chinese ethnic group. And this is again also the period that gives us these amazing jade burial suits.
Okay. So we've teased enough. What's a jade burial suit? Because I think when I first heard about this, my thought was that it was like Iron Man, but Iron Man made of jade, and that's not correct. There's thousands of little pieces in these things.
Yeah, it's between 2,000 and 4,000 of these little jade pieces, all of it sewn together. And it's sewn together, depending on your station, it might be gold, silver, or silk.
Wow.
So really, the suit description is probably better. This is a suit made for a corpse, and it's a suit made of maybe mostly stone, and maybe gold and silver or silk as well.
I can't imagine that a living person could wear one of these and move.
No,
right?
Yeah.
It would be incredibly heavy.
Yeah, only a supernatural, undead being in a Hollywood movie could do it. Now, we referred back to our episode on ghost burial earlier. And I do want to touch on that real quick, because a couple of the ideas we discussed in there are central to understanding why this much care was taken, for a dead individual. So we discussed the importance of Xiao, the filial piety in Chinese tradition, and it's rooted in Taoist philosophy, Confucian family values, and it concerns the undying nature of the human soul. You know, the dead live on in the afterlife. And then there are also ties to this Chinese notion of structural completeness, right? That you have this basic unit of the family, and if anything is out of place there, it's going to cause disharmony in your life and potentially in the afterlife.
Yeah, we went into far greater detail on this in the ghost burial episode, but I wanted to reference a 1995 USA Today article that was specifically about the jade burial suits and how it referred to this for Western readers. So it claims that tombs in general were thought to be portals between the living and the dead. And basically the concept was, and this is similar to what we went over in ghost burial, the soul was divided. There's one part of the soul that goes to heaven. The other part stays in the body. And the one that's in the body had to be appeased or else it would turn evil. While the one that goes to heaven acted on behalf of the loved ones by offering them either protection or good fortune. And this is why the living tried to ensure that the deceased were well provided for in death. So you get very similar death rituals to the Egyptians in that, like, people are buried with their things, with things that they think will keep them comfortable.
Yeah, there's this mix, though, with the ancestor of veneration, that it's not only is this somebody that deserved a proper burial and deserves to be, buried and with the things that they loved. This is also someone who can speak on your behalf in the afterlife. Like, this is an important contact to have.
Mm-hmm.
So you want them to be happy. You want to do right by them.
So the very first one of these suits, which is part of that, was documented in literature around AD 320. But that's documented in literature. We didn't find them until far afterward.
Yeah, it wasn't until 1958 that the suit hypothesis here, that these little jade pieces we were finding were part of the jade suit. It was just a theory at the time, and it wasn't until we actually found a really undisturbed tomb in 1968, two tombs in Hebei. And this is where we found tombs undisturbed by looters or mining efforts, and it resulted in two complete recovered and restored suits of jade armor.
And this is quite a story. And if you've, we're going to talk about this, but museums here in the United States have had these suits, one or the other, brought around on tour, basically, right? And so it's possible that you've actually seen one of these sort of restructured and put on display in a museum here in the West, but that's weird to me. I'll talk about it more later after we get through it, but I think it's a little It seems slightly offensive to me, especially given the nature of why it was built in the first place.
Now, you mentioned restored, and that's key, because if you see one of these in a museum on display, it has almost assuredly been restored.
Right.
Because despite the ideas tied up with jade, jade doesn't, or at least the jade suit as it was executed, does not actually preserve the body. So the body ends up rotting away. There's nothing left but bone. The suit collapses, and then sometimes the casket collapses as well on top of it. So everything has to be put back together.
Now, you actually have seen one, right?
I think I've seen a couple, but the one that I got to see in China is the one that impressed me the most. It was at the Museum of the Western Han Dynasty Mausoleum of the Nanyu King in Guangzhou.
Okay.
So I was there with my wife, my newly acquired son. He was not impressed at all as I strolled him around in the stroller.
How old was he, though? He was like two or three?
He was one and a half.
Oh, so yeah.
He was not having any of it. but the tomb was really impressive for me anyway. It was hidden 20 meters, 65.6 feet underground, and the king himself was covered with a silk and 2,291 pieces of jade to compose his suit.
Wow.
And the whole tomb really had the feel of just a cosmic vessel, and this was the suit of a necronaut, you know. But very much in keeping with the feeling that I get from any kind of Egyptian artifacts. Now, a number of other such jade suits, accompanied by hoards of silks, lacquerware, figurines, and bronzes, you'll find these displayed in many Chinese museums. They turn up, as you pointed out, in international collections and traveling exhibits. A 1983 count from the Institute of Archaeology in Beijing claimed 10,000 Han tombs had been discovered, and this resulted in 20 tombs with 23 jade suit remain. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and then when we come back, we'll jump right back into it.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.
We went from normal life, healthy child, to acute lymphoblastic leukemia, or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy, and we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
All right, we're back.
So one of the things that I was reading was that at the time that these were being made, and this goes along with our episode on Egyptian mummification, I mean, this was a process. It wasn't just like they had jade suits ready to go, right?
Right.
These suits would have taken the most skilled of jade smiths over 10 years to make. So they were either building them before the person died, or the person died, they were probably embalmed in some way, and then the suit was built around them 10 years after they had passed away.
Now, as should be obvious from that 10,000 tombs, 23 jade suit remains figure there, these were not for everybody. These were specifically for members of the Han aristocracy, because ultimately who else is going to afford a luxury burial item like this?
Mm-hmm.
The work, Hu Han Shu, or the, Book of the Later Han, a Chinese, court document from this time, explained, that your rank determined what sort of jade suit you were, well, suited for. Emperors had gold threaded jade suits. Vassal kings, high ranking imperial concubines, and princesses had jade suits with silver thread. And dowager concubines and sisters of the emperor, lesser aristocrats, had suits with copper thread.
I wouldn't be offended to wear a copper one.
No, I'd be happy with, with copper. Look, or
if,
tin.
If anybody needs a dowager concubine, call me.
Now, sometimes there were added decorations. Emperor Wu's suit was decorated with imagery of the flood dragon and other sacred creatures, and this is referred to as the flood dragon jade suit. But a lot of them are going to be, you know, featureless polished jade.
Yeah. One thing to remember here too is, like, we're throwing down terms like gold and silver and copper, is that jade was more valuable in China than gold or silver was in the West. Mm-hmm. And jade crafting, as we mentioned earlier, it achieved its height during the reign of Emperor Qianlong. And that was from 1736 to 1795 CE. He actually made all jade in the country his private property. And the idea was that if anybody tried to trade jade, it was punishable by death, because he owned it all, regardless of whether or not it was actually in his possession.
Now, this ties in nicely with the next point, and that's that evidence supports the theory that this was there was probably a centralized place or a couple of places for manufacturing these suits. Artisans would work on what was, again, essentially a luxury item. So you can't just go anywhere and get a jade suit.
Right.
And while these
probably still couldn't today.
No, yeah. I mean, unless you know a guy. It's also worth noting that while these items were for specific members of Han aristocracy, there were violations, including an account, and this was shared in a paper that we'll cite on the landing page by Jeffrey Cao and Yang Zhouxing. And this was the tale of a eunuch named Zhao Zhong, who secretly buried his father in a jade suit, but then he was found out, and so the casket was opened up and busted out, and his entire family was imprisoned for the.
Wow.
For the crime.
Think about that. I mean, like, given how difficult these things are to make, like, somehow you secretly had one of those made, you bury your dad in it, and then you're found out and caught and just, like, utterly punished for it. That's a story.
Yeah. I mean, and it shows how important all of this was to the culture at the time. You know, this was not just, You couldn't just be frivolous and get a jade suit. No, the jade suit was for particular members of society. Mm. And to violate those societal divisions was a dire matter. Now, we mentioned earlier how in the late 1950s, you had this hypothesis, these little jade pieces everyone was finding were bits of a jade suit. But that it wasn't until 1968 when they found those two tombs in Hebei. This is when we actually had evidence. We actually had two complete recovered and ultimately restored suits of jade armor. And in particular, they were Lu Xing, Prince Jing of the Kingdom of Zhongshan. So this was the son of the Western Han Emperor Jing and his consort Dao Wan. Now, while their bodies were undisturbed, the corpses had collapsed, the casket had collapsed, but everything was still in place. He had gold thread, she had silk. His suit contained 2,498 jade pieces. Hers contained 2,160. And in both suits, only the outer surfaces were polished, and the inner surfaces were scarred by circular cutting tools and straight edge tools, the very tools that you referred to earlier for the shaping of jade.
Yeah. And while the jade, you know, didn't protect their bodies from decomposition as was thought, the porous rock that was actually in this, I guess cave is the best way to describe it, did have absorptive capabilities. When they were found in 1968, the archaeologists had to work through, get this, two brick walls and a thick plate of molten iron that had been poured between them. And this is obviously because of how bad the grave robbing thing had become, and partially why this one was hadn't been robbed yet, you know. So they had to work their way through this. Liu Sheng's body had those jade plugs that we talked about earlier. He had them in his nose, ears, and mouth, and then the little jade shields for his eyes. They also each had gilt bronze headrests that were inlaid with jade, and they held jade crescents in their hand. Now, the coffin that was found on the floor, that was made of 4,000 pieces of jade, and it had just completely fallen apart into a pile on the tomb floor. There were also lots of sculptures, as we mentioned earlier. They placed lots of little items around, too, that were also made of jade, including those of a Bixi, which was a mythological, powerful winged beast that averted evil. And I included a picture in here. It's kind of like a dragon. It's like a cross between like a dragon and a dog with, it's got wings.
Yeah, I keep wanting to do like a full exploration of, as if such a thing were possible, of Chinese dragons.
Yeah.
Because there's so many different varieties, and there are a lot of things where you look at them and you think, oh, well, that's a dragon, or that's kind of a dragon turtle. But yeah, they all have very particular identities and symbolic power. Like you would, and it would depend where you would want to engrave one or include a statue of one.
Totally,
because
yeah,
it would protect certain structures.
You know, I think I pronounced that pinyin wrong too, because I just went with Bixi because it looks like it rhymes with pixie, but I think it's supposed to be Bixi.
Okay. Though he looks like a Bixi. When, you know, yeah, I can imagine his name being Bixi.
It was the Pokemon of their time. I mean, this thing looks pretty cool. It's kind of like a fat-chested dragon dog.
Indeed. Now, obviously, when we look at the jade burial suits, we're looking at the convergence of two different customs: burial in armor and the sacred use of jade. So there are plenty of examples of just normal decorative armor suits that were worn by bodies prior to this. And the prince that we just referred to, I believe he was buried with a suit of armor.
Okay.
And the suit of armor was actually of a more modern design.
Okay.
But that was just included with him, and he was actually buried, of course, in the jade armor.
Now, my understanding is these two in particular that we're referring to, these are the ones that are touring around the world, and you can see them in various museum locations.
Yes, I believe so. All right, so you're probably wondering, well, then what happens to the jade suits? Like, this is a pretty fantastic tradition. Why does it fade away? Why does something so rich and so ornate just vanish? And the answer is interesting. The answer has to do with all of those plundered tombs.
Yeah, it's all about grave robbing.
Yeah, and this was fascinating and disturbing as well when we read what the tomb raiders would do with the suits when they pilfered them.
Yeah, there were more than two dozen suits that have been discovered since 1968. But the reason why there aren't more is because in AD 223, Emperor Wen of Wei ordered that the production of them had to be stopped because of so much looting. And what would happen is these looters would go in and they would burn the suits solely so they could retrieve the gold thread that was within. They didn't care about the jade. And as you pointed out off air, well, if you had these little pieces of jade that were perfectly cut down to make a suit, you can't go sell that on the black market because somebody's going to know, oh, this must have come from this specific suit from this specific prince. But gold, you can melt down and turn into whatever you want and sell
it. Yeah, you can always come up with a story about that gold.
Yeah.
But those jade pieces were clearly stolen from an important person's body. And you might as well just walk around with a sign in Mandarin that says, execute me.
Right.
Now, you referred back earlier to the porous nature of the jade, and there is this idea that is put out there that even though jade does not have any magical body preserving properties. And, you know, despite the fact that no soft tissue has been found preserved by these funeral rites, it has been suggested that the porous nature of the stone itself might actually preserve some genetic material, and that, you know, DNA might be found intermixed with the jade.
Okay.
A lot of accounts of this notion refer back to a piece titled Immortal Jade by Sherry Talinko, and this was published in the Canadian Medical Journal. But to my knowledge, there's been no actual evidence for this thus far.
Okay, but I could see why it would be an interesting avenue of research. Like,
yeah,
there's some possibilities for genealogical research, especially, you mentioned the Han ethnic group earlier. Related to that, that could be some interesting stuff if you're looking at DNA samples.
Yeah, I think one of the problems there is that we do have tombs and graves from the Han dynasty that we're able to study and get genetic information from. So it's not like these would be the one place we would find it.
Yeah, and this leads into I know I mentioned this earlier, but it seems really weirdly offensive that these relics are kind of pulled out of where they were kept, trotted out across the world and displayed in museums. I remember the High Museum here in Atlanta had the Terracotta Warriors a couple of years ago, and they were very cool. But so my understanding was those terracotta warriors were buried with, you know, someone very much like these jade suits were. And I felt similar then. I don't know. I suppose if they didn't do this, the tombs would eventually be looted by somebody. But to me, I guess the idea more along the lines of what you saw when you were in China is you go to the actual site itself and you see them. That is at least like sort of compromising. You're allowing them to keep these suits that they believed were going to protect them in the afterlife.
Yeah, I mean, I guess this gets into a more complicated issue, and it's going to vary, you know, from culture to culture, and depending how far back in time you're going.
Yeah,
because this instantly makes me think back to when I was at the Field Museum in Chicago.
Yeah,
recently. We went up there for C2E2, and Joe and I went over there. They have a wonderful Native American section, a lot of it devoted to Northwest Coast Native peoples.
Okay.
And, you know, they have masks, they have costumes, details about their various, you know, rich spiritual traditions. But there's a section that they've completely marked off. You can't see into it anymore, because the display depicts important artifacts from their funeral rites.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So somewhere along the line, like maybe that tribe in its current iteration said, we're uncomfortable with this, please don't do it.
Yeah. So it's like a current people saying, we find this to be disrespectful and this needs to be handled in a more appropriate manner.
I'd be curious if there's anyone in China who feels that way about this stuff, or if it's just kind of like they've moved past that veneration for this particular dynasty, and they're okay with, you know, sending them around the world and having them looked at, because I guess in a way it spreads Chinese culture.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's curious. Well, if you're a listener out there and you have any idea, maybe you've lived in China or you're Chinese yourself, please let us know. I'd be curious.
Indeed. So there you have it. Hopefully we've provided a decent snapshot of another just really interesting funeral tradition, an artistic tradition, a time period, a little about the mineral, and the possibility of some sort of genetic material actually being preserved by this supernaturally infused funeral rite.
Now, I guess some people are probably thinking that I'm a bit of a hypocrite, because I started off the episode saying I would love to see a movie about a jade burial suited mummy, but at the same time, I kind of am uncomfortable about actually looking at the real thing. So, you know, I'd be curious if you've got any information about this that we missed, please let us know. You can reach out to us on social media. We're on Facebook, Twitter, Tumblr, Instagram. If you've seen these before and you've got details that you want to let us know about, please tell us that too, or maybe even some pictures. That would be cool.
Do you wear jade? If you wear jade at all, share any kind of, supernatural ideas that you carry around with it.
Mm-hmm. And then you can always visit our website, which is stufftoblowyourmind.com.
That's right. That's where you'll find and all the podcasts, including several of these we've mentioned, the Chinese Immortality, the Ghost Marriage, the various mummification episodes, the Chinese Zodiac, all of those are there, and we'll try to include links on the landing page for this episode.
And if you just want to write us the old-fashioned way, whether it's in English or Mandarin, you can write us at blowthemind@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.